Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Rocket Nation, welcome to another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here with you. Looking forward to another great show tonight, and we have another wild one. I'm looking forward to being on air with you these next couple hours, so thank you for tuning in. And tonight's broadcast mostly will be dedicated to the greatest rivalries in the history of sports. And for this, Rocket really had to dig deep into history of sports in general, just some of the great rivalries we've seen going back to when our forefathers were here. Some of the notable rivalries include Michigan and Ohio State football, Yankees versus Red Sox, Lakers versus Celtics, Cowboys versus Redskins, Packers versus Bears. Just so many rivalries. And even today, there's even rivalries going on today, and some rivalries have continued to be a trend. So thank you for tuning in tonight. You're probably wondering why is this show being broadcasted on Monday? Well, for those of you who don't know, tomorrow is Rocket's birthday. Yes, I'll be turning 27. So I decided to have the show be broadcasted on the eve of Rocket's birthday, just to be known as a special occasion. So I decided to kind of change things up a little bit and shake things up a little bit. That's what I'm known to do. I'm known to kind of change things up from time to time. I like to introduce my co-host of the evening. She was on our show last week. She's called a couple times as a guest. That would be Miss Lisa Morris, and welcome to the show again.
Hey, how are you doing this morning, this evening?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to getting a year older. I think most people can always look forward to certain things like that. I still have my youth, so that's good.
What do you have planned for tomorrow?
I'm not necessarily a guy that, you know, does the big celebrations. Last year I didn't do anything, and I was happy about that. I actually spent my birthday watching the NBA All-Star Game, which took place on my birthday last year. It was on a Sunday. The festivities already happened, but it's probably going to be a quiet evening, working on some things, you know, maybe study some lines for these upcoming films. You know, just finding ways to keep myself occupied. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, your birthday will be on the day we're supposed to be expecting a blizzard tomorrow afternoon, I guess.
Yeah, that's been the theme of the day out here in Michigan. For those of you out there who are in Michigan, it's not really something to look forward to. I hope you all got a chance to enjoy today. Today was very nice. The sun was out. It was not cold. It really wasn't windy. It felt really good out there today. But that can change in an instant, and when it comes to Michigan weather, that's obsolete, you know. I haven't heard too much about it, but I'm one of those guys when it comes to the weather, I believe it when it happens. So,
right.
So let's see what happens. Tomorrow, it also sadly marks, you know, the 1 year anniversary of the Trayvon Martin murder that took place last year, and that still kind of irks me a little bit. It's been unfortunate. It was an unfortunate situation. So that's something that a lot of people are probably going to be talking about tomorrow. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, posts on Facebook, you know, talking about that whole situation. But, you know, nonetheless, I'm looking forward to being a year older. You know, I'm just thankful to be here and to start a new chapter and getting a chance to do things like this. So I can't complain. And,
okay. What do you have on the docket for today?
Well, tonight we're going to dedicate this show to the greatest rivalries in sports. Going back to, you know, years, like many years ago, when you talk about rivalries, you know, what comes to play? You know, we talk about Michigan, Ohio State football, Yankees, Red Sox, Lakers, Celtics, Redskins, Cowboys, Packers, Bears, and even some of the current rivalries that we have going on today. You can even say Steelers versus the old Cleveland Browns, not necessarily the Cleveland Browns that came back into the NFL in 1999. That really hasn't been much of a rivalry, but all rivalries usually take place between two teams, and in some cases, most of those competitions don't necessarily mean, you know, the same division, maybe even the same conference, like Lakers versus Celtics, the biggest rivalry in NBA history. You know, these two teams have beaten each other for most of their championships. Recently, these two teams have faced each other twice in the last 5 years. Each team has won. The Celtics won the first matchup in 08. The Lakers returned the favor in 2010. So, you know, you just got to think about, you know, teams that face each other so many times and on the biggest of stages and very prestigious moments. So this is going to be a fun topic to discuss tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing your point of view on things because I know you are into rivalries when it comes to two teams really duking it out just to see who's better and who's going to win what. And, you know, these rivalries usually determine a lot between two teams.
Who would you say is a rival? Would you say OKC in basketball and Miami? Would you consider that a rivalry of sorts?
Not really, because it's only happened once on the grand stage. The thing when people want to talk about is, you know, it has to be between two teams who have faced each other so many times and in so many big moments. Now, I'm not ruling it out as a rivalry for the future. I think that it definitely mm-hmm. has the potential to be that. We could see these two teams in the finals again this year. A lot of people are counting on it. I'm kind of banking on it a little bit myself, but I can guarantee you teams like the San Antonio Spurs, the New York Knicks, and even the Boston Celtics are going to have a lot to say about it. But this is something that could transpire a lot, you know, for the next few years and even beyond if these two teams keep their players intact, especially Miami, because, you know, they are coming of age a little bit with some of their core players and even some of their bench players. Whereas OKC, they got a lot of youngsters who are quick, fast, like to run up the court, put up big buckets and things like that. But it definitely has the potential to be a big rivalry in the next 5 or 6 years.
Now, would you still consider the Lakers and the Celtics a rivalry?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Even though both teams have been struggling, both teams have been disappointments this year, there's still a meaning to that. And to the people who, the players, former players and former coaches, the ones who are still here, like a Magic Johnson, a Larry Bird, Michael Cooper and James Worthy and Bill Walton and Kevin McHale, you know, these guys who are still here, even though some of them have gotten different jobs with other different organizations and other different franchises, Lakers Celtics still hits close to home to those guys. Just recently, the day after Jerry Buss, the owner, had passed away, and I want to send my condolences to the Buss family, the entire Lakers organization. The Lakers and Celtics took the court, and it was a big game. It was a big game. There was so much emotion going around throughout the entire Staples Center. The Lakers won. They've been on quite a roll lately ever since Jerry Buss's passing, which I think is pretty remarkable. Do I think
right.
they can make the playoffs? That remains to be seen. But when it comes to Lakers-Celtics, even regular season games have a big meaning. You see these two teams playing each other on national television games, where that hasn't always been the case from the time that Magic and Bird and those guys used to go up against each other till, you know, the big three, you know, came together to get Boston the championship in 2008. So it's still a big deal. It's still something big to that. And, you know, these two teams, you know, as long as they continue to do what they do, it's a rivalry that could be even big in the near future.
Now, what about, do you think Detroit, the Detroit Pistons have a rival, or do you think Chicago is still considered their rival?
Well, being a longtime Pistons fan, I can say they've had more than one rivalry going back to the Bad Boy era. You know, Jordan and the Bulls, that was one of the first. I would say when the Pistons went back to the red, white, and blue color uniforms in 2001, one of their big rivals at the time was the New Jersey Nets. The Nets had swept the Pistons in the 2003 Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, for 2 years, they were the team that was on top of the Eastern Conference. They went to the finals twice in a row, and you had to kind of go through them. And the Pistons did just that the following year in 2004 when they went on to win the championship. And then the Pacers, and that might have been the most brutal rivalry because those two teams are kind of similar in terms of style of play. You know, pound for pound, excruciating defenses, just players blocking shots on both sides, you know, both teams, you know, great coaching, good core players, guys who can come off the bench and do some things. And, of course, you know, you can't forget the malice at the palace.
Right.
That's something that really put that rivalry over the top. But the funny thing was when those two teams faced each other in the playoffs later on that year, the rivalry sort of disappeared after that because it took Indiana a long time to rebuild, and most of their core players had moved on to other franchises, whereas the Pistons continue to be a contender. But yet when they started to rebuild, Indiana started working their way back. So it's not much of a rivalry now because, you know, these two teams are not really facing each other in big deal games, you know, games that have a lot of meaning. Of course, you know, every game has a meaning. You have to win, but it's not like a big-time game. The starters, the Pistons, you know, they no longer play on national televised games right now because they slipped into mediocrity, where
right.
The Pacers are working their way back up to superstardom and being that elite team. And this year they look very dangerous. They actually beat the Pistons two nights in a row, both games by double digits. And the games the first game was absolutely brutal. I really couldn't even watch it. It was that horrible. The Pistons just haven't looked the same since Andre Drummond's injury. And who would have thought that a rookie being out right now would hurt a team, especially off the bench, the interior defense. Teams have been able to drive inside on them, feeling that there's nobody there to block shots. And it's been a struggle. It looked like the Pistons were really going to challenge for that eighth spot in the Eastern Conference postseason, but that hasn't been the case. But I will say in about another 2 years, I really think that they will be back to playing the way they used to play, and, you know, they'll start to make some noise again. So I'm counting on it. You know, they're going to keep these younger guys, most of them, together. I hope they do. I hope they keep the coaching consistent. But going back to the whole rivalry thing, Miami, that was about 2 years of fierce competition. And then Cleveland. Cleveland became a division rival once again from the time that LeBron was there to the time that he left. Then the Celtics again for a little bit. So, you know, when it comes to the Pistons, like the head coaching, and the rivals haven't always been consistent over the years, but it's still kind of been fun to watch that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it sure has been. It just seems, like you say, the rivals have changed for the Pistons. It seems like there's always a team that's always in their way, and then this is, you know, year after year, there's this battle, and then somehow the Pistons end up beating and they move into another rivalry, you know. So,
well, rivalries change because players change. And sometimes players don't know how to hype up a rival anymore. Sometimes, you know, games between teams can be a little too friendly. You don't sense that fierce in competition the way it used to be. I can think of a time where the Cowboys and the Redskins, back in the 70s and even the early 90s, when these two teams used to really, really, you know, bang heads with each other. You know, you had the great coaching of Tom Landry and, you know, his guys, you know, quarterbacks like Roger Staubach going up against Joe Theismann, you know, guys like them, you know what I'm saying? That rivalry was quite intense. Even the mascots, you know, they always used to show the clips of the mascots, you know, the players dressing up like cowboys and players dressing up like Indians, and they used to go back and forth, you know, with the whole cowboy-Indian thing. You know, it's still kind of like that today, but that necessarily hasn't been the case. Maybe up until this past year in the NFL when the Redskins and Cowboys went up against each other in Week 17, and you kind of sensed that the rivalry was starting to pick back up again because over the years it's always been one-sided. The Cowboys had gotten the better of the matchup for the most part, but the thing that I'll remember is, you know, the 70s when I think of those two teams and how brutal games were back then, because every game just seemed like it was a big game. And when it comes to the Cowboys playing their home games on Thanksgiving, who did they play the most? The Redskins. So there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that.
Who would you say is the rivalry for my favorite team, the Patriots?
Recently, well, of course, it used to be the Colts, obviously, when Peyton Manning was the quarterback. And, you know, the funny thing is, what most people don't remember is that these two teams used to be in the same division, the old AFC East, mm-hmm. back when it was a five-team division, and then six if you include the Cleveland Browns, who came back in 1999. Now, what's so funny is that rivalry really didn't start to be real serious until 2002, when the Colts were removed from the AFC East and placed in the AFC South. That was when you saw the rivalry between those two teams really start to heat up. They met each other in the postseason a few times. It just seemed like it was always a big game. I remember, and I was actually watching this on the NFL Network, the NFL Top 10, when they were showing the top 10 rivalries of all time, and this was one of them. I remember when both teams, I think, were 5-0 in 2007, I believe. Then 2000 and I think it was either 2008 or 2009, the 4th-and-2 game where Bill Belichick, you know, went for that silly go-ahead on 4th-and-2. He had the lead in the game. All he had to do was punt the ball, pin Peyton Manning deep in his own territory, and who knows, it might have been a different result, but no. He goes for it, they don't convert, and you just basically give Peyton Manning a free invitation to throw a game-winning touchdown, which he did. Of course, the postseason, you know, when they beat each other to go to their Super Bowls, when the Colts won their Super Bowl, they had to come from behind, being down by 21-3 to New England, and they came back and won, and Marvin Jackson, former man from Michigan, picking off Tom Brady, another Michigan man. So that was kind of like quite an interesting signature ending to that game. But, yeah, I would say that used to be a big rivalry. The Dolphins used to be a big rivalry back when Drew Bledsoe and Dan Marino used to go at it. Nowadays, I don't know what the Patriots' serious rivalry was. Pittsburgh, you can make a case for them. To me, it's not anybody in their division, because nobody in that division besides them is good, you know. Maybe the Jets a little bit, kind of recently, but not so much. Maybe the Ravens. You know, maybe you can make a case for the Ravens. You could put them up there. You could put the Broncos up there, maybe. It just depends on the heat of competition, what type of game is being played. Is it a postseason game? Is it a Monday night game, or any primetime game whatsoever? You know, when it comes to their organization. But recently, you have to say the Colts, you have to say the Steelers, and you got to put the Jets up there too, because of the coaching, you know, the head coaches. Even when Eric Mangini was the head coach, he was a former assistant under Belichick, and those two kind of had a massive amount of hatred towards each other for a while, and that was quite interesting to see that. I would say those three teams, you know, recently, but, you know, something might change. That might pick up a little bit these next few years.
Well, you know, now, I just happen to be.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because I always just kind of wondered, I always thought it was probably New England, maybe San Francisco, but it just didn't, I don't know, like you said earlier, because of the personnel changes, it doesn't seem like those, you know, are considered rivalries as much now.
Well, some of the best rivalries that we've seen back in the old days, they haven't had much of a meeting because, you know, things have changed. Like the Packers and Bears, longest running rivalry in the history of the NFL. These two teams have played against each other more times than any other two teams. They've only had really, really a few. Meaningful playoff game, meaningful games over the years. Of course, the playoff game in 2010, the NFC Championship game where the Packers went to Soldier Field and won, and they went on to win the Super Bowl. But that rivalry has always changed. It was like up and down a little bit because the Packers dominated that rivalry in the 60s. Then in the 80s, it was the Bears. And then in the 90s, it was the Packers again. And then in the early 2000s, you kind of started to see it a little bit being half and half a little bit. Needless to say, it was still a big deal, and it still is between these two teams because, you know, you want to play for division supremacy. You want to play for conference supremacy, who's going to get the top seed and who's going to win a division, you know, that sort of thing. So there's some big meanings to these rivalry games, but, you know, friendly competition, things like that, it's changed because of personnel changes, coaching changes, player changes, that sort of thing. So it's hard to keep your core players intact for a rivalry to be even more serious because, you know, players come and go from teams and, you know, it just changes so drastically.
Well, what about college football? Who would you say is the biggest rivalry there?
Hands down, it's Michigan, Ohio State, by far. I'm
going to
definitely dedicate more in later's broadcast to that because that meaning, that rivalry has a lot of meaning. I got this chart of these games. My mother got me this chart between these two teams from the very first game they played all the way up until 2002, where they played 100 games. Since then, they played more, obviously. But, you know, these two teams have really, really, really have gone at it. And it's something that's going back to, you know, like I was talking about earlier, our forefathers, you know, our ancestors when they were still existing. This is pretty serious. It's pretty serious between these two teams. And I'm going to dedicate the second portion of our show to that later on the broadcast. Now, like I said, you know, this show is being on a Monday. The last time I had a show on a Monday was Christmas Eve. And it was kind of different a little bit. Of course, it was the holidays now. And I'm kind of treating my birthday as that a little bit, but I'm not getting overexcited or anything. But it is the eve of my birthday. I'm looking forward to just, you know, turning a year older, first and foremost. Speaking of birthdays, I want to take this opportunity to throw some birthdays out there to some notable past and maybe even some present players. First of all, happy 55th birthday to former NBA player and former head coach Kurt Rambis, who was best known for his time with the Los Angeles Lakers. He played there from 1981 to 1988, spent some time with the Charlotte Hornets and the Phoenix Suns, Sacramento Kings, and then came back to the Los Angeles Lakers in 1993. And in 1995, he retired as a player. He also spent time as a head coach in 1999, but, of course, they were swept in the conference finals by the San Antonio Spurs. And then when Phil Jackson came over, Rambis was demoted to assistant head coach because stayed on with the franchise and went on to be part of a few championship Laker teams. He also won four championships as a player, all four of them with the Lakers, obviously. 1982, 1985, and then 87 and 88. He was the WCC Player of the Year in 1980. He was never known as a big-time scorer. This guy was just a rugged player. He was actually best known for wearing the goggles and being quite a physical player. I remember he used to get into fights with guys like Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn and Dennis Rodman and those guys back when the Pistons were known as the Bad Boys. But he was quite an exceptionally defensive player. He was such a rugged player. He was just so tough. He could get up and down the court and do all the little things. He was the type of guy that, you know, you enjoy watching him play because, you know, he didn't put up a lot of big numbers as a scorer, but he still did those little things that you ask a guy to do. He also now is a current basketball analyst for ESPN. I've watched him a few times. I like a lot of things he has to say. So happy 55th birthday to him. And, you know, he's still doing his thing. He's still part of the NBA legacy. And it's good to see that. It's good to see that. And, again, happy 55th birthday to Mr. Kurt Rambis. He was also a former head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So I wanted to take that and throw that in there. Happy 50th birthday to former Major League Baseball player Paul O'Neill, who, I'm not going to lie to you, I couldn't stand him because he played for the Yankees, and I'm anti-Yankees. I'm sorry, you know. He was best known for his time there from 1993 to 2001. He won 5 World Series. He actually won 4 of them with the Yankees. He won the first one in 1991 with the Cincinnati Reds, where he played there from 85 to 92. He also won the 1994 American League batting title with the Yankees. He was another one of those players that did those little things. He was just one of those guys that, you know, he was kind of like a tough guy a little bit, you know, kind of clashed with, one of his former managers, Lou Piniella. Then again, Lou Piniella clashed with everybody. So
he sure did.
I guess you could say you could add O'Neill to the list of names. I mean, how many guys did Piniella go at it with? I mean, seriously. But he was one of those guys who, like I said, I couldn't stand watching him play because he played for the Yankees. And growing up as a Tigers fan and a Braves fan, too, I remember one of those World Series, he beat the Braves, and I was so not a happy camper about that. And, of course, the Tigers were a mediocre team in the 90s, and the Yankees always used to beat them a lot. And he was one of the big reasons. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him. He's 50 now. You can't take away from his accomplishments because he has done some things. And, I respect him. I respect him. I just hated the Yankees. I mean, I'm not the only one. I know a lot of people out there who hate the Yankees. So it's nice to know I'm not alone in that. And I will say that when the Tigers beat the Yankees in last year's playoffs, it was just salivating to me. I was just in awe. I loved it. Beautiful, just beautiful. And I hope that continues. Or I'd rather not see the Yankees in the playoffs at all. You know, I think I can go with that. You know, I think a lot of people can. So happy birthday to him.
I hate to admit that I am a Yankees fan, but, you know, I'm a Tigers fan, then a Yankees fan, and my softball team all got together and bought me a Detroit Tigers hat to keep me from wearing my Yankees hat to the games.
I think they had the right thing in mind. You certainly don't want to be going around Detroit these days telling people you're a Yankees fan. They'll just laugh at you, and they'll tell you to take your T-shirt and take it back to Mr. Allen's or something like that. That's what they'll say, you know, or the Salvation Army. I know people who buy, you know, T-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff from those type of stores. I would know because I'm one of them. Not Yankees gear, but the other gear. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him and, many happy returns. Happy 28th birthday to another player who I really can't stand, Joakim Noah, who plays center for the Chicago Bulls. I used to like him when he played in Florida. He was always such a passionate player. He went out on top in 2006 and 2007 during his time at the University of Florida, winning back-to-back NCAA championships. He went on to become a member of the Chicago Bulls, and I've never really cared for him much. I guess it's because he's part of the Bulls now, and as a Pistons fan, you're not really supposed to care for who's in your division in terms of rival teams and rival players and coaches. But, you know, I respect the way he plays, and he's done quite some things this year. He's become a bigger role player with the absence of Derrick Rose. But I'll be the first to tell you, he might not be too happy with the way that the team has been playing. They got a butt-kicking by OKC the other night by 30 points, and they had a big,
sure,
embarrassing loss to Miami last Thursday night. This is a team right now that's having trouble scoring points, folks. And I want to put this out there. I think that if you are going to make a championship run in the Eastern Conference, you got to put up some points. Because Miami can score, New York can score, Indiana can score, and even Boston can still score from time to time. So you got to go up against those teams in the postseason to where, look, if you don't have some amount of offense, I don't care if Derrick Rose is in the lineup or not, you got to do something. Seriously.
That's exactly
something
right.
needs to be done. So, I mean, I know that they might have been, and I don't know if a lot of people are really thinking about this, but I really honestly believe that this team is probably a little bit distracted with the whole Derrick Rose situation. Is he going to come back next week? Will he be back next month? He's been practicing with the team or whatever, running sprints or stuff. You know, when is he going to be back in the lineup? And sometimes when that happens, you're going to be going through ups and downs and a lot of bad times and things like that. There's going to be a lot of distractions that kind of come along with that whole thing because, you know, he's your best player. And when your best player is out of the lineup, you're going to have trouble, you know, scoring. You're going to have trouble doing a lot of things out there on the basketball court. But this team has got to find some sort of offensive resurgence because that side of the ball for them just looks ugly. They just can't score.
Yeah.
And that's a major problem if you're going to make a championship run because you're going to have to go up against Miami at some point and New York most likely. Now, they've actually had some regular season success against the Knicks this year, but in a postseason, it's a whole different ball game. Everyone knows that the team that you have success against in the regular season, that's not always the case when it comes playoff time. So I want to say to the Chicago Bulls organization, you got to buckle down and do something. But Noah has been quite a big role player for them. He made his first All-Star appearance this year. He's part of the All-Defensive Second Team. He won the Most Outstanding Player for the University of Florida in 2006. He's also been a part of the NCAA All-American Second Team. He was drafted in 2007 by the Chicago Bulls, the ninth pick overall, and he really hasn't disappointed. This guy has, well, he really had no choice to become more of a role player in terms of the offense because, you know, despite Derrick Rose being out, they still got some guys who can score, you know, with Hamilton, Luol Deng, Kurt Heinrich. I just think, and even Carlos Boozer, you know, obviously, but, you know, whatever is going on, they need to figure something out and figure something out quick because it's getting ugly. I hate to say it, but it's getting absolutely ugly, and, you know, something needs to change for them as quickly as possible because, you know, Indiana is running away with that division right now, and, you know, they got to do something. They have to do something. But
do you see when is Derrick Rose scheduled to come back?
You know, really nobody really knows. They're hoping I've been hearing reports about, you know, next month or, you know, come playoff time. I think this is what I think he should do. I think he should shut it down at least until the postseason. That way he'll get his legs back, hopefully, to where he can help them make a playoff run. I wouldn't jeopardize his health during the course of the regular season because this team's going to make the playoffs anyway. They may not get a higher seed. They may not be in the top four, but they still will make the postseason because, you know, it's thin in the Eastern Conference. Plus, they have a shot to possibly go up against in New York or maybe even Indiana in the first round. But I would rather have them sit him down at least until the postseason where if he's healthy then, if he's 100%, and if he's ready to go, put him out there and let's see what happens. But, you know, it's tough to risk a player who is not 100%, you know, during the regular season. But it depends
right.
on what they're going to do. I've been hearing, you know, they say he's supposed to be back by now. So it's just
wow.
kind of like, okay, well, you know, what's the issue? You know, that sort of thing. But it's kind of up and down. You know,
you don't want to rush him. You don't want to rush him back because I'm thinking about, remember when Grant Hill, I think, hurt his ankle when he was with the Pistons. and they rushed him back, and his ankle, well, not only did they end up losing in that round, but his ankle wasn't right for a long time behind that.
Plus, he wanted to come back. He actually wanted to play because at the time the only scoring option he had was Tracy McGrady. He felt that by coming back and coming back rapidly, he could add, you know, that other scoring option. I think back to when Orlando played Detroit in the 2003 postseason, the first round, and, you know, the series was won by the Pistons in seven games. And a lot of people say, well, you know what? If Grant Hill was fully healthy and played, it could have been the other way around. Because, you know, and who knows? Rightfully so, that could have been the case, you know. I mean, just imagine Tracy McGrady being a prime-time scorer at that time and a full, healthy Grant Hill. I really think Orlando could have done some damage, you know, within a 2 to 3 year period. You know, it really could have – they might have won a championship or at least – challenge the Lakers for one, you know. These ankle injuries with these players is always difficult and it's always tough. But, you know, they'll figure something out. And, you know, they're doing the right thing by keeping Derrick Rose out of the lineup, the Bulls are. So it just, you know, we might not see him at all this year. And, you know, this injury was a lot more devastating than what it looked like. I can tell you that, you know, just by – not only seeing the replays, but, you know, it's an ankle injury. You know, ankle injuries take away a lot of your athletic ability. Any injury from the knee down takes away a lot from your athletic ability. So
it really does. Because, you know, I'm thinking about Sean Livingston. He played with the Clippers, and he had that horrific break, I think, his knee.
Yeah, they showed that replay over and over, and he just was so devastated. One of the nastiest ankle injuries I've ever seen. I thought that it'd be a miracle if he played again. And he hasn't been much of the same over the years, but you know, it's good to see him be back. You know, first and foremost, we think it's good to see him back. But again, happy birthday to Joakim Noah. Many happy returns and good luck to the Bulls organization this year. Happy 25th birthday to Vikings quarterback Christian Ponder. I would say this is another guy I can't stand, but I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, he hasn't done much for me to like him. You know, Adrian Peterson is the guy that I hate on that team. You know, he's just there. he's just the quarterback. He's the quarterback because Brett Favre decided to call it quits finally, and Tavares Jackson didn't want to be there anymore. So they had to draft this guy. He was taken in last year's draft, you know, the first round, 12th pick overall. He was the 2011 Senior Bowl MVP, the 2010 Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award finalist, and the 2010 James Tatum Award winner. This past year, he threw 31 touchdowns, 25 interceptions as of 2012. He's thrown for over 4,000 yards, 4,700 to be exact. He has 88 career rushing attempts of 472 yards and two total touchdowns. He hasn't been that passer that people really have expected him to be. He had a monster game against Green Bay in the final regular season game, but he didn't show up in the playoffs, unfortunately, because he was injured, and they had to throw Joe Webb in, and Joe Webb has actually become a fan favorite. A lot of people are wondering, you know, Vikings fans are wondering if Christian Ponder is really the big deal, if he's the guy that's going to be the future, the guy that's going to lead this team to bigger and better things. By his numbers, I'm not so sure. I'm not sold on him. But, you know, it remains to be seen if he can be that guy. It's really hard to judge a quarterback. You usually don't do it until after 3 years. It's usually a 3-year development period. And then if he is not living up to expectations, then you make a move. So I will see, I would say in 2013, we'll see him at his full best, whether he plays good or whether he doesn't play so good. This is something that he needs more. He needs more help, really. And if Percy Harvin does continue his holdout and possibly gets traded, they are going to be in the world of trouble because they have nobody to throw the ball to. All they got is Adrian Peterson. And I think that's – see, a lot of people say, you know, Adrian Peterson was this tough runner who can do anything. I think, you know, he ran a lot this year because he had to. They don't have much help, you know.
Right.
I think if he had gotten that 2,000 yards, it probably would have been a little tainted because, you know, he's all they got. But, again, obviously it's a defense's job to shut someone down. But, you know, a running game, a good running game can wear down defense. But I would say he, Christian Ponder, is going to have to play better for the Vikings to really be a serious threat. They certainly were a surprise team this past year. I didn't expect them to be good. But 2013, we are going to see just exactly what Christian Ponder is made of. And I promise you, it's going to be something to look forward to. It's definitely going to be something to look forward to. And, yeah, happy birthday to him nonetheless. Good luck to you in your third NFL season campaign. And, you know, You're gonna need all the luck in the world because I expect a lot of teams to get better, and that division is going to be a lot more competitive.
I agree.
And another happy 25th birthday to Buccaneers defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, who was also who was drafted in 2010 out of the University of Oklahoma. This guy was the guy that, you know, going into the draft, a lot of people were wondering who the Lions were going to take with the second overall pick because everyone knew that the Rams were going to take Sam Bradford with the number one pick, and they did. A lot of people wonder if the Lions were going to take Ndamukong Suh, which they did, or if they were going to take Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy has kind of been, you know, quiet. He hasn't necessarily lived up to expectations for the most part. So far, I would say, you know, he hasn't done a whole lot. He hasn't put up a lot of big numbers, and he's kind of become a forgotten player. He actually didn't really do a whole lot. He only, as of, you know, week 14 of this past season, he has 68 career tackles, 9 career sacks, and 3 career forced fumbles. Compared to Sue's numbers, I think we know who has been the better defensive tackle or defensive lineman taken out of that draft. And I'm actually glad that the Lions took Sue because I thought he was going to be more ferocious. He was certainly going to draw more double teams. He was a guy that was going to get to the quarterback a lot quicker, and that's been the case. And it's funny because Tampa's all over the years, they've always been known as a, you know, for the last 15 years, a top-notch defensive team, and this guy is supposed to be the guy that provides that. A lot of people thought that Gerald McCoy is going to be the next Warren Sapp. So, you know, there's still, you know, he's still young into his career. But when you are a top-5 pick, expectations are always going to be extremely high on you. You've got to deliver, and you certainly have got to make sure that you are doing what you're supposed to be doing, especially, you know, when you make a lot of money. And in his case, he signed a 5-year, $63 million contract. Me personally, he has not lived up to that. And, you know, these rookie players, you know, who sign these big-time contracts, you know, if you're going to sign that kind of money, you better live up to the expectations. Seriously.
Is he nearing close to your list of possibly being a bust?
As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't say that just yet. Although he has played 3 seasons in the league and hasn't necessarily lived up to expectations, but I would say I would give him another year. Find out where he really ranks, because, you know, this past year they brought in a new head coach, you know, Greg Schiano. And, you know, sometimes when you bring in a new head coach, you know, that's also a certain level of development because it's new personnel, new assistants, and things like that. But we're going to find out his true colors this upcoming season because Monte Kiffin is no longer the defensive coordinator. He moved on to take a job with the Cowboys. So the guy that they're bringing in now, we're going to find out just exactly what Gerald McCoy and the rest of that defense is really capable of. Because this defense has fallen off the map. They've really fallen off the map, and they struggled. They're not the same Buccaneers defense, obviously. But I think that he has a chance to get better. But as far as the top 10 draft bus, to me, he's nowhere near the top 10. He's nowhere near the top 10. I wouldn't put him on the list just yet. But as far as defensive linemen, you can make a case for him a little bit because he hasn't necessarily lived up to $63 million. So far, he's living up to more like 63 cents. But, you know, that's a whole different issue. But he's got time to get it together. You know, like I said, they brought in a new head coach and a new coaching staff this past before the start of this past season. So we're going to find out what he's really made of next year. So he's another guy that's going to have the radar on him and many other notable players in the league who have not necessarily lived up to full expectations. So that completes the birthday list. Happy birthday to those guys. Happy birthday to me again. I can say that. We are still taking calls, 347-327-9586. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Tonight's topic will be the greatest rivalries in sports, and I'm looking forward to talking about that aspect. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to update some scores. We got some games going on in college basketball. We also got some games in the NBA tonight, some NHL games, and spring training kicked back in the MLB, and we got a devastating injury to talk about. So we got that coming up after the break. Yes, I'm sorry, Lisa. It happened to your Yankees.
I know.
We'll be right back on a Rocket Sports Breakdown. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here on the eve of his 27th birthday. Happy to be on air once again, joined by my co-host, Lisa Morris. Thank you for being here with us this evening.
It's my pleasure.
We got some scores and some notes to pass along. Right now in the NBA, we've got two games that are in session. The Wizards are beating the Raptors right now, 29-24. That game's in the second quarter. And the Pistons are up 23-18 over the Hawks. That game is in the first quarter. Tonight we got Boston and Utah. That game will be taking place at 9 p.m. And the Lakers and Denver, that game also taking place at 9 p.m. Eastern. Speaking of the Lakers real quickly, I thought this was pretty funny. Okay, the Lakers took the court against the Mavericks yesterday. And Mark Cuban, the crazy Mavericks owner, most of us love him. Most of us, we just don't understand him. He made some comments about the Lakers and suggesting the Lakers should do something with Kobe Bryant regarding an amnesty clause. Well, if you're a player, you would take offense to that, you know. So Kobe responded by putting up 38 points against the Mavericks on the road, and the Lakers won. In fact, they are 11-4 in their last 15 games. And on Twitter, Kobe basically put down two words, amnesty that, to the crazy Mavericks owner. And I just thought that was pretty funny. They were talking about that on SportsCenter today. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Speaking of the Lakers, like I said, they've been on the road. They've been playing exceptionally great, especially since the passing of their owner, Jerry Buss, who has done so much for the organization. And unlike Mark Cuban, he's only won one championship, and he spent a lot of years trying to get one. So I just thought that was kind of funny to share that with everyone out there, because that is kind of funny. It's nothing funnier right now when it comes to the NBA and stuff like that than shutting up somebody like Mark Cuban. I remember guys like Dirk Nowitzki always had to tell him to shut up whenever he was losing his cool during games. Like, if your own players are telling you to shut up, you know you got a problem. I mean,
that's
seriously,
right.
that's just absolutely hilarious. But the Lakers will take the court against the Denver Nuggets tonight, another big-time matchup between two teams who had a great playoff series last year. I thought that series went right down to the end, and it was very competitive. Of course, it should have been over, but Andrew Bynum had to be stupid and open up his big fat mouth. Now he's not playing right now, and some people probably prefer it that way. we actually have one. They actually lost. We actually have one NBA note to pass along. The team that beat the Lakers in last year's playoffs, the Thunder, they actually signed former Laker Derek Fisher, who will be returning to the team.
He actually played
nine games with the Mavericks early this year before he suffered a leg injury back in December, and he actually asked to be released from the team. So being a free agent, he decided to come back and possibly give it one final run. Thunder have signed him for the remainder of the season. Depending on how far they go, he'll be a free agent after this year. This might be the final year we see him play. He has done some great things in this league. He's been quite a great clutch performer, a great clutch shooter. I'll never forget the 0.4 seconds where he shot against the San Antonio Spurs back in the 04 playoffs. I thought that was like a bullet. He drove a bullet. And the look on Greg Popovich's face was so priceless when that play happened. I've never seen a place get so quiet after a shot like that from a visiting team or a play like that from a visiting team. And it was funny because it was going back and forth. Kobe Bryant hit a big shot, and then Tim Duncan hit a crazy shot over Shaq, and then 0.4 ticks left on the game clock, and you know everyone thought the ball was going to Kobe. Derek Fisher comes off a block, catches it, shoots it, bam.
He actually ran faster off the court
than he did when he shot it. I thought that was actually
sure
really funny.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
it's good to see him back. He's been more involved with the office as far as one of the representatives for the Players Association. If anyone didn't remember, they actually cut ties with Billy Hunter, and I am so glad they did that. I never liked him.
Yeah,
never
me
liked
too.
Him. He had to go. It was just time for him. It was time for him. And it's funny because this is a guy that's always been doing those public campaigns, and he was doing a lot of talking for so many years. And, you know, he's one of the guys that has criticized David Stern. I guess that's the only thing about him I liked. But, yeah, this actually happened recently. And I just discovered that Billy Hunter is actually a former NFL player. I had no idea. I did not know that. I did not know that. He was actually a former NFL wide receiver. He played two seasons. He played in 1965 with the Redskins and then in 1966 with the Dolphins. I had no idea. He was actually cut from the NBA Players Association during the All-Star weekend. Since 1996, he actually served as executive director. There's just so many issues, so many irregularities that apparently ousted him from his position. So he's unemployed right now, and maybe some people actually like that. But I just didn't really like the way he carried himself and his whole attitude about certain things. But I was with him when he criticized David Stern, though. I was with him. I was with him. Now, if David Stern can hurry up and leave, we'll all feel a lot better. One more year, folks. One more year. I'm so going to be looking forward to that. A lot of people are going to be happy about that. People are counting down like they were when George Bush was in office. And I can't wait to see this. It can't get here fast enough. It can't get here fast enough. But he's going to be Derek Fisher is going to be signing with the OKC Thunder. He's expected to take the court with them pretty soon. Probably not their next game, but it's expected to happen pretty soon. And they need some leadership in that locker room. I'm tired of seeing Russell Westbrook during these post-game interviews when he's doing stupid stuff, and he knows he's doing stupid stuff, and yet this guy's talking about something, I ain't doing nothing, man, you know, whatever, man, y'all tripping and criticizing reporters. I'm like, dude, see, this is what happens when you're a young player who's making a lot of money, you're a big-time scorer, you want to be elite, you're arguably the best at your position. You think you're invincible and you think you can do anything, and, you know, you have an attitude problem. And if I'm Kevin Durant, who actually has 11 technical fouls this year, I need to be more of a leader. You know,
right.
They got some leaders on that team, but if I'm the best player on that team and one of the top three, actually the best player arguably in the game today, I need to step up and be more of a leader. And it's funny because Scott Brooks is doing such a great job coaching this team. He's
really
absolutely
is.
Great. Maurice Cheeks has been a great assistant coach, but I saw one particular clip where it was a game against Memphis, I believe, a few weeks ago where Westbrook was losing his temper and he was sitting on the sideline and Maurice Cheeks had to walk over to him and kind of console him a little bit. You never want to see that. You never want to see that. A player has to remain focused and get his act together because, you know, especially when you are trying to fight for the number one seed in the Western Conference and you're playing very, very good basketball for the most part, but, you know, you can always get better. And he's one of those guys that needs to just get himself together. But hopefully Derek Fisher will be one of those guys that provides that leadership, and he'll be a big reason for what the Thunder will do as far as leadership and bringing that veteran presence to the team.
I agree, because I think Derek Fisher has always been a solid leader in whatever locker room he's in, and maybe he's that calming presence that he'll bring with the Thunder, because Scott Brooks was a point guard in the league, and Maurice Cheeks was a point guard. So they must have had to look at their situation
and
say, hey.
Coach, by the way.
Right, and they must have had to say, look, the situation in Forest Horse is not working, and we've got to do something about it. So I think it's a smart move on both their parts to bring in Derek Fisher.
Derek Fisher actually played with the team last year. He wasn't on the court a lot, but he has done some things. Since 2005, he played for Golden State for one season, spent some time in Utah, and he was always a guy that was just providing veteran leadership. And if any team that's looking to make a championship run needs leadership, it's him. It's that team. It's that team. They could certainly use that. And I think that he'll play quite a vital role in that locker room, granted, because it's always needed. It's always required. Moving on to the NHL, we got a couple games in progress right now. We got Toronto already up on Philadelphia 1-0, the end of the first period in that. Montreal and Ottawa are still scoreless. That game is in the first period. We got Dallas and Nashville taking the court, the ice tonight at 8 o'clock. Edmonton and the uproar Chicago Blackhawks at 8:30, and Anaheim and Los Angeles at 10:30. The Chicago Blackhawks, wow, they've been doing some things. They are 15-0-3. Technically, they're undefeated. They've won 15 games. They've had only 3 ties. They have yet to lose a game this year. They are just doing a number. It's quite amazing to see what they're doing, and I have to tip my hat off to them. They are playing some great hockey right now, but it's still early. We all know that sometimes just because you get off to a fast start doesn't necessarily make you the best team in the league.
That's right.
But I will say I will give them mad props right now because they are playing some great hockey. They have 33 points, which leads the league, and, you know, the competition in that division really isn't close. St. Louis is doing pretty good. The St. Louis Blues, the Detroit Red Wings are playing pretty well. Nashville Predators are playing pretty well, but none of those teams are where the Blackhawks are right now. But they're going to put their undefeated streak on the line once again tonight. And, you know, good luck to the Edmonton Oilers. They could certainly use all the help they can get trying to figure out how to beat this Blackhawks team who is doing some big things this year. So I got to give them credit. They're playing good. They are playing good. And they don't seem to be suffering any major injuries to one of their core players, unlike this next team that we're getting ready to talk about. And I know this is probably going to hurt you, Lisa, but hang in there, my friend. Bear with me. It's going to be all right. Moving on to the MLB, Major League Baseball. Spring training has been kicking off now for the past few days. That's been one of the biggest talks right now throughout the Major League Baseball and their fan base. But if you're a Yankees fan, it just can't get any worse for you right now. Now, Derek Jeter, actually, the return of his progress has been a lot better. The status of Alex Rodriguez is still unknown, but they just suffered quite another devastating blow. Okay, Curtis Granderson suffered what looked to be an arm injury. His first at-bat of spring training, according to Yahoo, he broke his arm when he was hit by a pitch from Blue Jays pitcher J.A. Happ in the bottom of the first inning yesterday, and he is expected to be out 10 weeks. He'll be eligible to play the first week of May. That seems like a long time from now, and MLB, the season will already be in progress by then, so not having him at the beginning of the season is going to hurt this team. Keep in mind, the Yankees were part of a 3-team trade that acquired Curtis Granderson a few years ago because they thought that he was going to be a big role player in them. And, you know, when they won the World Series, and I think they won the World Series a few years ago, if I'm not too mistaken, He was a big part in that. He does some things, and but just to watch him last year against the Tigers, his former team, struggling, just watching him struggle, it was just so bad to see that, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but he did suffer an arm injury. I know you're not too happy about this, Lisa, and I know that you you're a diehard Yankees fan. I respect that, but I know this probably beats you up a little bit. And you have every right to be upset. You know, you have every right to be upset.
Granderson, because I was really upset when they traded Granderson. I mean, I was just so upset. But then you have Austin Jackson. Jackson just fit in easily. And so Granderson had a great year with the Yankees last year, but then once they got into the playoffs, they all folded like a deck of cards. It just I felt bad for him because he's really a good guy, you know, and I've spoken to him on quite a few occasions. Just a real nice guy, but just to have this type of – because he's never been really hurt in his entire career. And
right.
See that he's going to be out.
He actually that team, the Yankees, they had a great regular season. They led the league in runs last year. I just think that they kind of burnt out from, you know, playing so many games because you play 162 regular season games. That's too much. That's a whole lot.
Yeah.
And because of that, I just think that they ran out of gas in the postseason. And it kind of started
right.
when they went up against Baltimore, the Baltimore Orioles. And then you saw what the Tigers were able to do with their outstanding pitching and just their younger core of players. You know, the Yankees,
yeah,
their team, they got players in their 40s. You know, they bring in the veteran players.
If you're each series that you're involved in and they have to keep, extended playoff series, that'll burn you up real quick. And I think that, then Alex Rodriguez, he was just non-existent. Because Granderson was up for, I think, MVP or was home runs or something. And like you say,
he was
makes
actually, last year, in 2011, I'm sorry, he was actually the Silver Slugger Award winner.
Right.
He was the American League RBI leader in 2011. And he's been a three-time All-Star, including last year. He was certainly, you know, definitely making a name for himself. He actually, last year, he got his 1,000th career hit.
Right.
He got his 200th career home run in the same season. He had 43 home runs, 106 RBIs, but you know, with all that came some struggles. He set a new Yankee season record by striking out 195 times. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Tigers had traded him, because Curtis Granderson is a guy that will strike out.
He
always goes for the hit. He tries to go for the home run. I'm like, take your time, dude. Just hit the ball. You know, don't try and go for the jugular because it's not always necessary. But
that's
he's
right.
a guy that's always trying to go for the money shot, as most people would like to call it. And it cost him. It actually cost him his time in Detroit. That's one of the reasons why they let him go. Austin Jackson, to me, is just a better fit. He's just a better fit for what the Tigers have been doing, and that's going to continue to be the case. If you see Curtis Granderson's time, and if he's not striking out, you know, he'll hit some fly balls. You know, he'll hit some ground outs. It's just not you know, that consistency, despite putting up, you know, nice, decent numbers. But when you strike out that much, you know, it's a problem. It's a problem.
It definitely is. And I do think Austin Jackson, I always thought he was a better outfielder, I thought. Because once he came in, it's like I kind of thought, oh, I settled down myself. But I'm also thinking, too, with Jim Leland resting his players like he does through the season, and he was often criticized for that, but it seems to be a very smart move on his part.
Many coaches will always be criticized for resting their players when, you know, there's still time to win games during the regular season. I think in this case, it really wasn't about trying to get home field or anything like that. You know, when you have players that you know you're going to have to count on when it comes time to really make your championship run, giving them a little bit of rest is not a bad thing. It's not.
No, sure
I
isn't.
Mean, like I said, you play 162 regular season games. You know, there's nothing wrong with resting your players. It really isn't. And one thing I've noticed is that some teams don't do it. They don't do it. They'll have some pitchers pitch complete games and their batters, you know, hitting the ball a lot or, you know, not being taken out when they should be when a certain game is over. But in this case, I think that the problem with Granderson is he's just always trying to go for that big hit. And that's not something that you always need to do. If
right.
he takes the time
right.
to, you know, just, you know, focus. You know, focus. Don't lose sight of where the ball is going to go. I think that he could possibly be a better hitter and he wouldn't strike out so much. Because he is a good hitter. He is a good hitter. He's got good vision. He's got good awareness. And he is a solid outfielder. But, like I said, I think that Austin Jackson is just a better fit for this team. And Granderson might be a better fit for the Yankees, but, you know, when you go to play for that team, you know, you're going to have expectations on you right away. And he's been one of those guys that's been a marked man because of that. But, you know, I think that he can get better. I think he will be better. And he's someone to, you know, look out for. But this injury is going to put a damper on what the Yankees are trying to do right now because, you know, this is one of those injuries that hurts. It's definitely hurts. And he actually broke his arm, you know.
Right.
You break your arm. Yeah. Yeah. It's messed up. And A-Rod is already out until the All-Star break. And Nick Swisher is a free agent. They lost him to free agency. Granderson actually led the team with 43 home runs last year. And the Yankees were just a juggernaut on offense during the regular season. 249 home runs and five players with at least 20. I mean, seriously, that's pretty big. Well, whatever happened, they just kind of, you know, ran out of gas in the playoffs, unfortunately. But
you know, Johnny Damon is, I guess, looking for New York to give him a call if they need him. Because he's, what, 39 years old?
He's one of those guys that I think he went back to the team a few years ago to make another run. He's one of those guys that not too many teams are going to sign to a contract because of his age, for one, and his lack of durability. Because, you know, he's not the same hitter he used to be. And, you know, he is coming of age, obviously.
Right, and he's not a good outfielder at all.
Yeah, that's been another issue that had been lingering for so many years. Plus, he just he had an issue with management and things like that, if I'm not too mistaken. But he's one of those guys that if a team needs a veteran hitter for a short while, they'll call him. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees do call him and give him a contract shot. It would not surprise me one bit.
You know, there was, you know, the year that he had all that facial hair, his hair was really, really long, and he had that beard. And
yeah.
One commentator said, he looks like Jesus, but he plays like Mary.
Yeah, those were the good old days. Those were the good old days. I think y'all will be fine, though. And I think that what will happen is other players are going to have to step up in his absence. But when he comes back, he's going to, you know, he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy. They wanted him, and they were willing to part with Austin Jackson to do so. So there's going to be quite a load that Curtis Granson will have to carry when he comes back from his injury. Well, it's almost 8:30. We're taking calls 347-327-9586, the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Having a great show tonight. We're going to take a small, quick break. We're going to talk about the greatest rivalries when we come back. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on Blog Talk Radio. Stick around. Time is nearly 8:30. Rocket is still here. We're having another great show. this evening. Lisa Morris is still here with us. Thank you for your contributions tonight.
It's good being here with you, and happy birthday again.
Thank you. Thank you. I still feel young, and that's one of the most important things that I have on my resume to this day. I can go home happy with that. We're now getting into our main discussion, which is the greatest rivalries. We actually spent a lot of time talking about it earlier at the top of our broadcast. When you think rivalries, you think about teams that have faced each other for a long time. It may not always be a meaningful game, but on many instances, it's a game of importance, not just between, you know, the two teams, but the fan bases, the coaches. There's a meaning to that. And when I think of all of those factors, one main rivalry really comes to mind, and that is Michigan and Ohio State. The first game was played between these two teams, the football teams, I should say, in Ann Arbor in 1897. And it resulted in a lopsided victory for Michigan, a 34-0 blowout.
Wow.
And the Michigan winning streak just went on and just became absolutely amazing. In fact, the very first five games these two teams have played, Ohio State never scored a point.
Wow.
The second game was played in 1900. That game was actually scoreless. Neither team scored. In 1901, Michigan, 21-0. 1902, Michigan, 86-0. Yes, 86-0.
What?
1903, 36-0. 1905, 40-0. 1906, 6-0. And 1907, 22-0. In fact, the first 10 games, nine of them, Ohio State never scored a point.
Wow.
And when they did score their first set of points in 1904, Michigan still blew them out anyway by a score of 31-6. I would have loved to have seen those Ohio State players back then get embarrassed that many times. I mean, my God. Ugh, how embarrassing. And that 86-0 game, oh, my God. Wow. Wow. I mean, seriously. And the Ohio State alma mater, Carmen, Ohio, was written on the train ride home to Columbus following that game that they lost 86-0. And unbelievable. Now, in 1912, Ohio State became a member of the Big Ten Conference, which upped the tempo on the rivalry, I should say. And then 5 years later, Michigan actually rejoined the conference after being away from it for 10 years. 1918, both teams played their first conference matchup. And like most of the other previous games, it was another lopsided victory, resulting in Ohio State not scoring any points, 14-0. 11 shutouts Michigan had over the Buckeyes at that time, up to that particular point. The first time Ohio State beat Michigan was in 1919, winning over the Wolverines 13-3. And then they won the following two games. Now, recently over the years, in the past 10 years, Ohio State has gotten the better of the rivalry. But really, back in those days, oh, my goodness, I wish that I could go back in time and just watch those games. And how proud I really would have been to to be a Michigan fan of the football team. Just beautiful. Just beautiful. Now, more memorable was when the coaches became really, really big on this rivalry. Everyone talks about the 10-year war between Hayes and Bo Schembechler. Bo Schembechler is actually an Ohio guy. Many people don't remember this, but this is what makes it so interesting. Bo Schembechler was born April 1st, 1929, in Barberton, Ohio.
Yeah, Ohio guy.
And actually, he died November 17th, 2006, in Southfield, Michigan. He actually played at the University of Miami, Ohio, as an offensive tackle. He started out 1952, his very first coaching job, 1952, with Ohio State as an assistant. In 1955, he was an assistant at Bowling Green, assistant at Northwestern from 56 to 57, went back to Ohio State as an assistant from 58 to 62, and then Miami, Ohio, where he played at from 63 to 68, where he got his first head coaching job, and in 1969, he became head coach for the very first time at Michigan, all the way up until 1989. He was also the Detroit Tigers president from 1990 to 1992, and he was actually part of the personnel from Michigan from 1988 to 1990, so he wasn't just the head coach. He was also part of the front office. And this rivalry was just so big. These two guys, for the most part, Shane Beckler had a 5-4-1 record against Hayes. And by the time that these two guys went up against each other for the final time, Michigan had dominated the rivalry 42-28-5. Of course, when Jim Tressel took over as the Buckeyes head coach in 2001, he basically discovered a formula to beating the Michigan. Ohio State became more of a running football team, and no matter how hard Michigan could try, especially in Ohio State, they could just never get the best of Ohio State. The game that I most remember recently was a game that Michigan lost. It took place in 2006, at the time when both Michigan and Ohio State were both 11-0. And technically, a lot of people felt like this was the national title game, the national championship game. The game took place November 18, 2006, at Ohio State. The Buckeyes won 42-39. It was a competitive game all the way, very competitive. Ohio State built themselves a double-digit lead at halftime. Michigan made a rally, but it just wasn't enough. And this was actually one of the last few games that Lloyd Carr coached for Michigan. In fact, his last game he coached against Ohio State was in 2007, which was another loss. Jim Tressel had a 6-1 record against Lloyd Carr, and Lloyd Carr actually had a 6-7 career record against Ohio State as a Michigan head coach. And don't ask me about Rich Rodriguez, because that doesn't count. That's asterisk. Those games got asterisk written all over. It was a mistake to bring in that guy in the first place. Now, Brady Hoke has actually had a little bit of success. 2011, Michigan won 40-34. It was a great game. Denard Robinson played one of his best games as a Michigan man. 337 total yards rushing and passing, and he had 5 total touchdowns. Now, with the recent incidents with Ohio State, the 2010 season, all of those games were vacated. So the game against Michigan that year was vacated because of the allegations with recruiting players and things like that with Jim Tressel, which actually caused him to leave the football program. And in comes Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer actually was a former assistant at Ohio State, 86 to 87. And then just last year, Ohio State won the game 26-21, which actually, ironically, gave Ohio State a perfect regular season, but because of the issues and the suspensions, they could not partake in a bowl game. And who knows? That could have been them in Alabama in a national championship game and not Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame caught a break with the whole Ohio State issues being allowed to play again. Although Notre Dame had a great year. They had a very great year. I'm not taking nothing away from them. They had a very great year. But most people would tell you Ohio State probably would have been more deserving if not for those incidents and things like that. This is just such a big rivalry. It really is. And the thing that I enjoy is just watching these two teams go up against each other, because there was a lot of hatred. One of my favorite plays was Desmond Howard returning, I believe it was a punt. And when he scored at the Big House, he did the famous Heisman pose. And that rained forever in Michigan. Just Michigan territory, that rained forever. If you're a Michigan fan and if you love beating Ohio State, you don't forget that play. You know, most people don't even remember what year that game took place, but people remember that play. People remember just watching, you know, some of these players go up against each other. And you know what's funny? Both teams, actually, this is actually pretty amazing. Both teams produce some big-time players from both teams. You know, Tom Brady, Charles Woodson, Marlon Jackson, Braylon Edwards from Michigan, and then from Ohio State, Eddie George, who's a former Heisman Trophy winner, Orlando Pace, who was a great offensive lineman, Terry Glenn, great wide receiver, Mike Vrabel, Sean Springs, Ricky Dudley, just big names from both players. And some of the guys have not necessarily been big names in the NFL, but when it came to playing in college, these guys were some of the best that Michigan had to offer, and Ohio State as well. Just amazing. And you certainly remember a lot of great things about just this rivalry. And it's fun to watch, and it still is. I know that the Big Ten kind of split into two separate divisions in a way, but I hope that Michigan and Ohio State continue to play each other. It's lovely. Some rivalries have died over the years, but this is one that has continued to grow strong. And hopefully Michigan will turn the table once again and continue the dominance that they've had when they first began this rivalry back in 1897 and continuing in the early 1900s.
Who would you say is your favorite player from the standout player in the recent game between Ohio State and Michigan?
Are you talking history or more recently?
More recent.
Of course, I got a lot of love for Denard. I love the way he plays. They don't call him Shoelace for nothing. I certainly enjoy watching him play. Some of the players who've come out of Ohio State, I enjoy watching play. I love Eddie George. Eddie George was a very good runner. His career was cut short, obviously, because of injuries. But he was great. He was great to watch.
Yeah, he definitely was.
Such a big presence, 6'3", 225 to 230 pounds, was a big part of the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans teams from the late 90s to the early 2000s. Got to play in the Super Bowl, but, of course, in that game, the team came up one yard short of probably tying up the game and sending it into overtime. Robert Smith, when he played at the for the Minnesota Vikings during the late 90s. His career was short, but he retired at the age of 28, I believe. He didn't play a whole lot of years because he didn't want to suffer a lot of serious injuries. He was a very quick, explosive back. He was good coming out of the backfield, catching passes and running the football. He's very, very fast, was just good. And, of course, you know, Chris Carter, I enjoy watching him play. Coming out of Ohio State, he, you know, was just elected to the Hall of Fame. Congrats to him on that. Certainly deserving. I'll give him credit where credit is due. Just so many players that these two teams have produced. It's just so great to watch. I would say recently some of the players have been busts, particularly in Michigan. Michigan has produced some bust players, Anthony Thomas, David Terrell, Ty Streets. You certainly can make a case for.
What about Mike Hart?
I don't even know if Mike Hart actually played in the NFL game. I think that that's absolutely unjustified. Like, seriously, I know the Colts took him, the Indianapolis Colts took him in the 2007 draft. I don't think he ever played in a football game, not in a real NFL game. I don't know if I've ever seen that happen. I'm like, he's the all-time leading rusher at the University of Michigan. And you mean to tell me this dude never really got a shot to play? I mean, wow. Just wow.
Was he undersized?
I don't know what the case was. I think he was certainly deserving of the opportunity. And
mm-hmm.
I just find that quite a shot, that he never never really got a chance to play. Now, the funny thing is he was drafted by the Colts. He only played about 2 or 3 years. What happened was apparently he was actually drafted in 2008. I'm sorry, he was drafted in 2008. He was actually third on the Colts depth chart. They already had Joseph Addai. He was their undisputed starter. Dominic Rhodes was quite a playmaker they had. He was a big part of the Colts when they won their first Super Bowl, when they won that Super Bowl a few years ago when they beat the Bears back in 2007. And his rookie year, he had just 9 total yards on two carries.
Wow.
And then he one particular game against Baltimore, he suffered a knee injury when he caught a pass from Peyton Manning. And then he was placed on injured reserve, on IR, which ended his season. And then the following year, in a preseason opener, he had an ankle injury. And he got cut from the team one day. And the next day, he was signed to the practice squad. And then he was brought up to the main depth chart. Then later that season, he was cut again. And then he was re-signed to the practice squad the next day. I'm like, y'all make up your minds with this guy. Then he got promoted to the active roster, you know, about a week later. And then late in the season, he got some touches. He had 11 yards, 2 receptions, 27 yards. But he actually, his best game was in 2010, in a Monday night game against the Texans where he ran for 84 yards on 12 carries. And then the following year he was cut. Now he's actually an offensive quality control coach at the University of Eastern Michigan. So it looks like his playing careers are over. But, yeah, you could certainly make a case for him being a bust. But here's the thing. He was a 6th-round pick, which I actually found that quite shocking, but he was 5'9". You know, he was quite a small guy, but you know, he can come back and play if he wants to. I mean, he's 26 years old. He can come back and play right now if he wanted to. He's 5'9", 206 pounds, quite a power back, you know, a power runner. But, you know, whatever the case, he just wasn't a bad situation. Never really got his opportunity, which is a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, because he's one of my favorite players. Mike Hart was. I just was just so surprised to find out that he was already out of the league.
Yeah, a lot of these players, a lot of former players are out of the league in Michigan. Steve Hutchinson was an all-pro offensive line, best known for his time with the Seahawks when he blocked the likes of Matt Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander. And I find it funny because he came out in a 2001 draft with some of his other couple teammates on the offensive line, Maurice Williams and Jeff Backus. Now, Jeff Backus has not been a Pro Bowl player. Looks like He might not be coming back to the NFL this year. He might be calling it a quit. Steve Hutchinson actually retired last year. Maurice Williams was he was actually from Detroit, born and raised from Detroit, but he never made a Pro Bowl either. And he had some bad years with Jacksonville, but, you know, he never lived up to expectations either. And he was a second-round pick. But Steve Hutchinson was the guy that a lot of people thought had superstardom as a blocker, and they were right. But, you know, this whole rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State is just so big because you got, you know, the two states are right next to each other. You got, it's funny because you got Ohio State students and players who were born in Michigan, whereas Michigan,
yeah,
you got Michigan athletes and students who were born in Ohio. So it's quite interesting. It's amazing to see that, and it's just awesome. It's awesome. And both schools continue to go at it today, and I'm looking forward to the upcoming season. It's going to be a new look Michigan team. They're going to have a new quarterback. Ohio State, you know, we'll see what they're going to do. Urban Meyer will be back as their head coach. So it's a big rivalry. One of the other big rivalries is Yankees and Red Sox. And Yankees and Red Sox, this is hated, just hated. The funny thing is that these two teams have had so many years. Well, the Yankees were a team that was always on the rise, and the Red Sox were always on the downfall. It really began with the whole Babe Ruth trade, which happened, I believe it was 1916. I believe that's the year that he was traded. No, I'm sorry. It was 1920. He was traded to the New York Yankees. Now, he actually won 3 World Series with the Red Sox, went on to win 4 with the Yankees, established himself as one of the greats of all time. Some people believe he's still the greatest MLB player of all time. After that trade happened, the Red Sox just went on a downside. I mean, just on a complete downside, at least up until 2004, where it was one of the best playoff matchups in history, especially between these two teams. The Yankees were up 3-0 in the series. They were up 3-0, and it looked like they were going to run away with it. They were hitting runs right off the park, and the third game they won by a score of 19-8. A lot of people were ready to write the Red Sox off. They were like, yeah, they're not going to come back from this. It's not going to happen. And then next thing you know, game 4, they win in 12 innings. They scored 2 runs to win the game. And then game 5, which was 14 innings, they came back and won after being down 4-2. So technically they scored 3 unanswered runs, including the final one, the game-winning run in the 14th inning to come back and win. And then in game 6 at Yankee Stadium, they scored all 4 of their runs in the 4th inning, and the Yankees scored 2 runs, 1 in the 7th and 1 in the 8th. But Boston was able to hold on and win. And Curt Schilling was obviously the best pitcher for the Red Sox in that series. And the Red Sox went on, and in game 7, they made it look so easy. They won by a score of 10-3, and they went on to win the World Series. Just amazing. And it was funny because a lot of people said the Red Sox came back from being down 3-0, and they did it against the Yankees. It couldn't have happened to a better team. And for them, it absolutely was. If you were a Yankees fan, and again, I know that you were probably pissed off about that. You got every right to feel that way. That was just messed up. But, you know, the Red Sox finally ended the drought. and they went on to win the World Series and established themselves as a great team. And, you know, they definitely had some big-name players on that team, but a lot of people wrote them off after Game 3. A lot of people, including me, I wrote them off. But that was an amazing comeback. I think even Yankees fans have to admit that it was an amazing comeback. It really was. Wonderful. Just a wonderful big rivalry. But you have to believe that Babe Ruth was rolling over in his grave when the Red Sox came back and won.
I was rolling over in mine.
I know, but for so many years, he was probably laying in his grave smoking a cigar, and when it finally happened, he probably choked on that cigar because it was just unexpected. It was an instant classic. Nobody expected that. It was just amazing, just amazing. One final rivalry before we go. Lakers and Celtics. I know we was talking about this earlier. It was just wonderful. These two teams have played each other in more championships than any other two professional sports teams. Boston has won 43 postseasons to 31 of the Lakers. In the regular season, the Celtics have dominated 155 to 124. The first time these two teams played was back on November 8, 1948. And from then on, it was history. It was history. Bill Russell was a big part of much of that success for the Celtics. Back when it was him and guys like Sam Jones and the head coach Red Auerbach going up against guys like Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, Gail Goodrich, and head coach slash general manager Fred Shaw. Just amazing how the Celtics were able to win these championships. And actually, the first eight NBA championship matchups between these two teams, the Celtics won. The Lakers won the first between these two teams in 1985. Then they won again in 87. And the Celtics won in 2008. And the Lakers won the last championship meeting between these two teams in 2010. It's a big deal between these two teams. People talk about the players. You talk about, you know, guys like Bill Russell going up against Jerry West, and then you got guys later on, Magic versus Bird, and then later on, Kobe versus Boston's Big Three. It's a big deal. And the coaches who are part of these championship teams, illustrious. The last matchup with Phil Jackson going up against Doc Rivers, two of the best coaches and arguably the two best coaches during that time. And it was just wonderful to watch, just wonderful to watch. And I've had the pleasure of watching most of the games over the years, and it's still bad blood in a way. It's still bad blood. And with the recent passing of Lakers owner Jerry Buss, when he first purchased the team, he said he purchased the team to beat the Celtics. And I think the most recent victory for L.A. would definitely put a smile on his face. But I know he's up there with Red Auerbach and a lot of those former greats who are no longer here. And, yeah, it's probably a bad blood up there, too, between these two teams. But anything you'd like to elaborate on this now that we – are nearing the end of our broadcast tonight?
Well, in learning of when Jerry Buss just recently passed away and realizing just how hated the Celtics were was his famous remark, and this is removed the most odious sentence in the English language. Can never be said again that the Lakers have never beaten the Celtics. I was like, you know, wow, this rivalry, it didn't make, like this rivalry between these two teams was just so serious.
And the funny thing is, these two teams are not in the same division and they're not in the same conference, and that's what makes it even more amazing. But I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just thought that this rivalry between these two teams, even though
Magic and Bird were seemed to be just good friends off the court, but once they got on the court, it was always about their teams.
Competition.
You know? So it was
friendly competition.
Right. It was very, very, very good at back in the day. So I just think that because I remember the announcer for the Celtics. He had that gravelly voice. I can't think of his name. I think it was Most, Johnny Most.
I think so.
And
yeah.
I mean, I can even still hear that guy's voice in my head. Even when the Celtics were playing the Pistons, when Isaiah was inbounding the ball and it was intercepted, and I could hear that voice.
Yeah, people still have nightmares about that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's actually what caused me to start watching basketball. I happened to be house sitting, and a friend had the TV on, and I just stopped doing what I was and sat down and managed to see that one play, and it just devastated me just for this few little minutes. And I
Absolutely.
Think that's when the rivalry between the Pistons and the Celtics began.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the great rivalries between the Lakers and the Celtics, wow, I just wonder, are we still going to have those kind of rivalries today? I mean, it's going to be just that intense.
Definitely. And it's going to be even more intense, especially these two teams maintain their depth charts of players and continue to draft better, do better in free agency, maybe even do better in trade. So I'm looking forward to it. Well, folks, thank you again for tuning into our show tonight. We had a great show on the eve of my 27th birthday, so I'm happy to take this opportunity and spend time with you all this evening. Lisa, thank you again for so much for calling in. This is a great show. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you all next time. And on behalf of Lisa Morris, this is Christian Rocket Adams. We had another successful installation of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. See you next time. In the meantime, keep on watching sports. Have fun watching tonight's games, whatever game you end up watching. Take care of yourselves. And, again, thank you all for the Facebook birthday messages so far. I look forward to more of them. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you all next time.
Good night.